The second noble truth, let's continue. The first is that they're suffering. The Buddha didn't start with happiness and joy and enlightenment and so forth, because that would make an ideal. I want to get there. He said, all right, let's start with where we are. Let's be very practical about this. Second noble truth is the cause. What's the cause of suffering? Our reactions to it, our aversion, our hatred, our greed, our fear, our jealousy, worldwide and personally. What makes all the wars and starvation? Greed. Not just desire. Greed. Insatiable, deep greed. Fear. Hatred. Delusion, prejudice, aversion. There's enough food. There's enough oil. There's enough energy. There is. We don't need more resources. We need less greed and hatred and delusion and more love. That's the source of it. Do you know that there have been 105 revolutions or wars since World War II? And there are only 155 or 60 countries? Not a good track record as a species. It's really sad. The source of it worldwide is the same as the source in our personal lives. What's the source of our suffering? Our greed and our attachment and our fear and our reactiveness and our jealousy. My teacher Ajahn Chah used to wander around the monastery, especially when people were having a hard time. He would kind of come up to people, walk up slowly with his cane, and if you look like you're having a hard time, he'd come over and he'd say, are you suffering today? And you might say no, in which he'd say, fine, have a good day, enjoy yourself, you know. Or if you said yes, then he would say, oh, must be very attached. And then he would walk off, you know. It's that simple. It's like direct wire. And when the light on the dashboard reads suffering, it means just one thing. Guess what? It's that basic. But what we have done by our conditioning from very early and what our culture teaches us is that we have touched the wounds and the pain and the difficulties with aversion and fear. We've pushed them away. We've run away from them. And we've touched the pleasure that comes. Our automatic habitual reaction is that we touch that and we say, oh, I want more, and we grasp. And so we spend our life tottering back and forth between trying to run away from and avoid pain and suffering. Anybody been able to do that? I'd like to meet you. Or to grasp and have only pleasure stay and have something stay. Have anything stay. Have you found anything that stays? A single thing. A moment even. And so we go back and forth. And we are at war. Mostly with ourselves and with what is. If you want to heal other people, this is the healing to start with. Now there is another way. And we all know this. I mean, what I'm telling you, probably half the people in the room could sit up here and tell us the same thing. So we're just kind of reminding ourselves, yes, don't forget, you know, don't run away today. Oh, thank you. I appreciate your opinion. Yes. It's that simple. It's really very basic. At the same time, it's really hard. I've spent years in meditation, in therapy, in body work, doing service work of different kinds. And I still see how powerful is the habit of fear and aversion and running away in certain ways. It takes real love and devotion to do it. But if we want to do it, if we want to do this healing work, we have to discover or find that courage to let go. And that courage really means that we have to be certain of our capacity to love, that we really can do it. Mostly in my work these days, I used to see a lot of greed and anger and desire and all kinds of neurotic things. That's what I used to look at. Mostly in my work these days, I only see one thing. I see fear. That's really what's at the bottom of everything I see. People are afraid. Afraid to feel, afraid to be here, afraid to open in some way. So do we have that capacity? We create our sense of self out of ideas. There is a different reality, and it's not there through some fantastic altered state spiritual hoobly-gooble. It's really a very practical and immediate reality. There is a capacity that we have of our being, of our hearts. It's called the greatness of heart that we can discover, that can live from a place of openness. We can really do it. This is Martin Luther King. And, I mean, he had real great difficulties. This was in the middle of the difficult, people were being bombed and killed and whatever. He said, "We will match your capacity to inflict suffering with our capacity to endure suffering. We will meet your physical force with soul force. We will not hate you, but we cannot in all good conscience obey your unjust laws. But we will soon wear you down by our capacity to suffer. And in winning our freedom, we will so appeal to your heart and conscience that we will win yours in the process." Isn't that a line? "We will soon wear you down by our capacity to suffer." He's somebody who stood on his death. He stood right in the center of death and suffering and said, "There's a greater reality than this." To do this, to see all of the things that we've struggled with and instead come to a place of letting go, requires a very deep forgiveness. That's really what's asked of us. Forgiveness doesn't mean you condone it. If somebody rapes somebody or murders or something, you don't say, "Well, I forgive you. That's terrific that you did it." It doesn't condone at all. You might take very strong action and say, "That's terrible. That must never happen again. We will do what's necessary to ensure it." And forgiveness is there anyway. And in the end, one finds forgiveness. Why should one forgive? Because the person that you don't forgive, you know, is off having a vacation in Hawaii, you know, and you're here not forgiving, and who's suffering? That's one reason why. Because who does it help or harm? Secondly, the third Zen patriarch said, if you want to awaken into the Tao, the way of enlightenment, you must be without anxiety about non-perfection. It's not perfect. It never has been, and it never will be. Or as Elizabeth Kubler-Ross puts it, "I'm not okay, and you're not okay, and that's okay." Right? Forgiveness means that life is the way it is rather than the way we wanted it to be. And that doesn't mean that we can't offer our love and service to create beauty in it, but it is the way that it is. We look for perfection in the wrong place. There's only one place to find perfection, I promise you. Half of meditation practice is simply self-acceptance. I mean, I do retreats, three-month retreats for 100 people. Do you know what people do for a lot of that 3 months? Self-acceptance. And they don't want to do it. I'll accept this much, but not. Forgiveness. Does this make sense to you? And without that, how can you love another person? A poem from my friend Ed Brown, and then we'll do our next meditation, okay? He's a Zen teacher and a cook. He wrote the Tassajara bread book and the Tassajara cookbook and so forth. He says, "And still we cook. At any moment preparing this meal, we could be gas 30,000 feet in the air, soon to fall out poisonous on leaf, frond, and fur, everything in sight, obliterated, deceased. And still we cook, putting 1,000 cherished dreams on the table to nourish and reassure those close and dear. In this act of cooking, I bid farewell. Always I insisted you alone were to blame. This last instant, my eyes open, and I regard you with all the tenderness and forgiveness I withheld for so long. With no future, we have nothing to fight about. May all beings be happy. This last instant, my eyes open, and I regard you with all the tenderness and forgiveness I withheld for so long." Don Juan says to Carlos Castaneda, "The trouble with you is you think you have time." It's really an extraordinary line. You think, "I'll do it tomorrow, next year." To awaken is to do it when? Is to do it now.